The Women of Ill Repute, with your hosts, Wendy Mesley and Maureen Holloway.
So, Wendy, I had a checkup recently.
Is this a joke? Is this the beginning of a joke?
Well, it may turn into one, but aren't you going to ask me how I am?
How are you?
I'm officially normal.
Yeah, well, physically.
Well, it was a physical checkup. And yes, I was like, you want to be normal for my age and my particular decrepitude. I've got normal blood pressure, normal blood sugar, normal cholesterol. It's all good. It's all good.
So congratulations, Maureen. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. I know. So, yeah, I mean, normal, if we're going to talk about normal, in the dictionary, if you look it up, it means regular, average, natural, not abnormal. So congratulations.
Yeah. No, being normal physically is okay. But otherwise, normal can also mean workaday, run of the mill, garden variety, standard issue, predictable. So who really wants to be that?
Well, as a kid, I kind of wanted to be normal. Doesn't everybody want to fit in when they're a kid? But now, I don't know. Most of the people we've invited to be on this podcast are kind of, they're not normal.
They're creatives, yeah, adventuresome. My thesis is that there really are very few people who are normal. A lot of people pretend to. The people who pretend to be normal often have secrets, often dark secrets.
Well, secrets are great. I love secrets. But you know what? The most interesting people, they're not normal. I don't want to be normal. I might look normal, but I don't want to be seen as normal anymore.
I think that's one of the things that I like about you. A lot of people who know you quite well like about you is that you seem very girl next door-ish, but you're not when they get to know you. And that's in a good way. But you don't want to swing too far into abnormality. I mean, there's eccentricity is acceptable, and then you get into deviancy. And
I'd like to be a deviant. But let's go back to normal. Some of the best entertainment, it's based on sort of normal places or situations. A trailer park in Nova Scotia, a small town in Ontario. But the characters, and we're going to get into them in just a second with our guest, they're kind of weird.
They're quirky. You're, of course, talking about Trailer Park Boys.
Yes.
And Letterkenny and Jonathan Torrens, who is our guest, who's in all those shows. And we're going to just say hello to him in just a second. But have you had a checkup lately?
By a Hungarian? Does that count? No. There's a reason why you're the comedian and not the journalist.
The joke is, have you had a checkup? The joke part is, no, but I had an affair with a Hungarian.
I had an affair with a Hungarian.
Help us out.
There's something
this.
About a poll. Anyway, yeah. Jonathan Torrens is our guest. He's a recurring character in Letterkenny and Trailer Park. He was in Trailer Park Boys. Now there's a new one called Shorzy. And they're all, he writes, he does a podcast. He's like kind of does all of this amazing stuff. And he's with us.
Yes, right now we can talk to him to his face.
Hey,
hi.
Wendy, I secretly hoped you were going to say I was a recurring character in your life. Because we have crossed paths over the years at a public broadcaster, place we used to work at, you know, both of us.
Yeah, I think that was the CBC. You probably had a happier. I was remembering that running into you in a diner in Lunenburg or something. Like you're a big Nova Scotia boy.
I'm everywhere. I'm actually a PEI guy by trade. I was born in Prince Edward Island, but I have lived in Nova Scotia and called it home for much of my adult life. It's where I started my career on Street Sense in the late 1980s, back before the internet, when CBC was the communications railroad that united people from coast to coast. So I lived away for a long time, but I'm living back in Truro, Nova Scotia, about an hour outside of Halifax.
So we're trying to figure out, like our whole thing, you could probably tell with the intro, you were secretly in the green room there. What we call it the green room, which is wherever you are. is about being normal. Are you normal? Because I, you know, like researching you, you've done like so many things. You're an actor, you're a writer, you're a podcaster. Are you normal? Is that do you aspire to be normal?
I kind of subscribe to the theory that when you don't do any one thing particularly well, it helps if you do a bunch. And that's kind of the East Coast approach to life in general. But also in this business, in this country, you have to be several things. But one of the reasons I live where I do is because it allows me to have a very normal day-to-day existence in an industry that is, by its very existence, not normal. So the novelty of my so-called Canadian celebrity has long ago worn off here. And much of my existence has to do with going to the farm supply store and going to Sobeys and everyone in my neighborhood can barter a trade or a skill. All I can offer, as you can relate, is hosting. No one needs any hosting done in the country. But the great thing is most of my interactions fill up the creative well, and there are character ticks that I can draw on to play these weirdos on these shows.
So you are cast, well, certainly in your more adult life, as opposed to the stuff that you did as a kid, and you were a kid, but they're all odd characters, like a white wannabe rapper or a Mennonite farmer and no, a dick, a Quebecois sportscaster. I mean, you're not necessarily weird, but you're written weird. Your characters are written weird.
It took going to Los Angeles and sitting in casting rooms with a bunch of buff dudes in deep V-neck t-shirts to realize my lot in life. I might have seen myself at one time as, I don't know, maybe I could be leading man material. I don't know if I peaked too soon or had a false sense of confidence. But without exception, the casting directors would say, okay, you guys are read for hunk, hunk, hunk. And they'd look at me and say, weird guy at the convenience store in the lobby, perv. Guy who's new to town that everyone is kind of afraid of, gay best friend, like the other category of life and of acting characters is not only where I find myself, but it's also the most fun because there's no responsibility of having to carry the burden of an entire series on your shoulders. It's like Weekend Dad. You can just kind of show up every 7 pages, make a few jokes, and no one gets sick of you before you peel off. But the characters all have something in common, which is overconfident and underqualified, which is just personally what I find really funny.
So I just want to know, are all of the people in the V-neck t-shirts and the hunks, they're not happy, right? They're not.
Well, when your entire, and this is something women certainly relate to maybe more so than men, when your value is wrapped up in your looks, and there's no way you're going to hang on to that forever, then no, that's not a recipe for happiness. Better to be a character actor. Better to be a character, I would argue, in general.
I would argue, too, it's more interesting, and not that I obviously could speak to what it's like to be buff and wear a deep V-neck t-shirt, but I know that once I accepted that I was niche guy, there's such a freedom that comes with that because I'm not purporting to be anything I'm not. But Wendy, I have the same question for you in a news context. Did you feel like you had to wear a CBC News coat of armor that didn't allow you to be the silly deviant that you claim to be?
Well, I'm not that deviant. I've kind of embraced that. And I, you know, people who know me know a different Wendy, but it was kind of real. Like journalism meant a lot to me and the politics meant a lot to me. And it was kind of an easy way of living. Well, I don't have any opinions and I'm not going to pronounce on anything because I'm just a journalist. So I didn't have to take any positions on anything, which now I can confess made life a lot easier, but it wasn't that constraining because CBC, you know, we're not on great terms right now, but it was a great place. They let me do all kinds of shit. Well, and so did you, Street Sense and Jonavision. Like, it was a really cool place. Now I'm not so sure it's so cool. But yeah, I got to do lots of cool stuff. But being an anchor, like Maureen looks at, you know, I used to put on the big anchor voice and the big, well, we used to wear shoulder pads when we were in Ottawa. But yeah, I mean, the makeup and the hair and like everything had to be perfect. And I had the anchor voice, which my daughter does a very, very good impersonation of.
I think there's a real dichotomy at CBC between the creative side of it and the news side of it. I think the news people are held to a very rigid standard. Maybe they've loosened up a little bit, but not that much. Whereas on the creative side of it, CBC can hold its own with anybody in terms of, you know, off the wall quirkiness for sure. But I think it's very much two separate solitudes.
Were those walls or lines blurred for you in radio? I assume you were always kind of encouraged to be yourself and bring anecdotes and, you know, share a peek behind the curtain.
That, thank you for asking. I never was like anybody else on the, I didn't even want to be on the radio. I wanted to be an actor. And I ended up getting a summer job and it turned into a career. But I think the reason why I was good at it was because I said things that other people wouldn't say. And I wasn't trying to conform. There wasn't a lot of leeway early in the day. Like, you were the laughing woman. If you were on a show, the men would make jokes and you would be the designated laugher. But then later, I guess about about 20 years ago, I started realizing I could make the men laugh, which was powerful and fun. So that's where the way I went, but it wasn't a prescribed path. Yeah, I didn't want to fit in. Not there.
I remember the formula used to be the dude, the dick, and the dough in the morning, right? That was radio's recipe for success.
Yes, that's the dude, the dick, and the dough. That's really funny. I was the dough, clearly.
I was going to say, in that lineup, I would be the dough. And maybe in this triumvirate, I am the dough as well. Just happy to be here and tagging along for the ride. But you chose to be the dick. Good for you.
I decided I wanted to be a little bit of the dick. There's a morning show on Parks and Rec. They're called Crazy Ira and the Douche.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great name for a morning show. But they didn't have a dough.
There's a stand-up comic who has a joke about how on morning shows, it's always two guys with a nickname and someone with a hyper-normal name, like Cactus Face Meatloaf and Helen in the morning. Like, why doesn't Helen get a nickname?
Because women are supposed to play the part of the female, but that's very interesting. So let's talk a little bit about the difference between being weird and mentally ill. I mean, there is a distinction, and this is what we were touching on earlier, but that if you wander too far off into trying to be deviant, in Wendy's case, that's that's a little questionable. I mean, you do need to fit into the world to be healthy.
My wife will casually mention from time to time how it's no secret that I'm a little out there. And I'm stopped in my tracks every time she says that, because to me, it doesn't seem that way at all. I seem like the most normal person going. And in fact, maybe I use more energy in attempting to appear that way than most do. I try to downplay what I do for a living, which is not common in my neighborhood. I try to be normal dad as much as possible. If anything, people say, oh, you must be crazy, wacky dad, are you? I'm probably more serious and not severe, not stern, none of those things. But I think kids need parents. They don't need BFFs. So my day-to-day life, which I can achieve here, probably is more normal than people might expect. And it took figuring out for me that balance was how to achieve normalcy. And I can have balance here.
I found it really interesting. A tweet. I don't follow you all the time. I'm not a stalker.
A weirdo.
Yeah. I'm only slightly deviant. But you tweeted something recently. I think about how you were in Europe or something, and there was some cab driver, and he was saying, "Yep, I got my job." The difference between North Americans and Europeans being, you do what you want, and we do what we need, or no, vice versa. So that he would basically do his job, then he would go surfing, then he'd go drinking with his buddies. Like, what else do you need? And yet, you know, you look at all of the things that you've done, you've got like kind of both things going on, and you've named your kids unusual names. Like, what is it? It's
Sugar Daisy and Indigo. I love those names. Yeah. But you know, you've given that's a little off the wall.
I don't know if I've ever told this story publicly. Both my wife's grandmothers were named Daisy, so we knew we wanted to incorporate Daisy somehow. We had just been to Savannah, where people call each other Sugar. Hey sugar, how you doing, Sugar? Carol was 6 months pregnant. We were going for lunch at this restaurant that we like. On the drive there, we were saying, Daisy, Sugar, Sugar, Daisy. And I remember saying, I wonder if Sugar Daisy is a flower. It sounds like kind of rolls off the tongue. I know it sounds hippie-ish and actory and all the things that normal is not. We get to the restaurant. The server comes over and says, Carol, this new catalog called Bunnies by the Bay just arrived. There's some cute dresses in it. You should look. And on the first page, there was a little gingham dress that said Sugar Daisy on the chest. So that was, again, subscribing to the universe in a way that most people would say is not normal. That was very evident that was supposed to be her name, and she goes by Sug. And as weird as it is, she kind of looks like a little Sugar Daisy. And to be honest, we probably thought we would have one kid, and then suddenly we were having another one. It's like, what do you do now? And like, we have Cactus Face and Meatloaf. We can't name the second one Helen. So we had to find a name that was complimentary but didn't overshadow and wasn't competitive. Like, couldn't be Veranda or something like completely bananas. That's how we settled on Indigo.
My dad used to say that gonorrhea and syphilis are the most beautiful words. But they would make like a lovely names for a set of twins. But they are, of course, STDs. But
right.
What if Sugar Daisy becomes a, you know, like a Supreme Court justice? She'll be Madam Justice Sugar Daisy Torrance.
I know. And I've spent a lot of time thinking about what happens when all the kids with hyphenated last names start to get married, and then someone is Vanessa McNeil Anderson Thompson Bananaville. Like, people aren't going to be able to have business cards anymore.
I have some friends who named their daughter, I'm not going to give her full name, but Danger is her middle name.
No way.
Way. On her passport. That's her full name, is something Danger something. And that doesn't go over well at security.
I don't know how old your kids are, but do they want to be normal? Like, I remember like trying so hard to fit in. And then at some point you're just like, screw it. I don't want to fit in. I want to be myself. So I don't know how old your kids are. You're to me, you're still like a ute, but.
Right. Well, they're a ute. They're 13 and 11. And they're in junior high. They are so far young, 13 and 11. They're not device-y kids. They play dolls and make up dance routines. And part of the reason, at least, that we live where we do is because, well, this is the irony. We know that bad things happen in the world and assume they'd be more exposed to that in a bigger place, for example. And then Portapique happened very near our home. So that was kind of a big lesson in that you realize you can only protect them so much, but they will be exposed to things beyond your control and just have to do your best to instill them with values and good judgment and all that stuff that people talk about. But I would say they do a very good job of being normal, despite me doing a job that isn't normal here, despite the fact that they get to travel a fair bit to places that a lot of people who live around here don't get to go. You try to instill gratitude and all that stuff in your kids, but the best way for them to be aware is to see how other people live and see that it isn't easy for everyone and know that everyone has a story, including kids that live pretty close to the bone in their school. So far, they're very aware and kind, nice little tiny roommates.
Hey there. Just so you know, Mo and I are not just the queens of podcasting.
I'm not sure we're even that, but do go on.
We're not part-time cowgirls.
We just made that up.
But we are writers. We're writers.
Wendy and I write a newsletter on Substack. It's a weekly roundup of thoughts and experiences, sometimes serious, often not.
Yeah, you're pretty funny. You write about falling down a lot. You write about your dog.
I do. You write about sex and politics and COVID.
All very, very serious things. We have a few thousand subscribers, both free and paid.
And you could be one of them if you'd like. Just go to Substack.com and look us up by name, or go to our website at womenofillrepute.com and sign up there. We'd love to meet you there.
And now back to being the queens of podcasting.
Yeah, sure.
The Women of Ill Repute.
You've been a regular character on all of these shows, Letterkenny, Trailer Park Boys, now Shoresy, but they're all sort of similar in that they kind of glorify life in small towns. And you're from Halifax, which is not exactly a small town, but it is about celebrating the normal through the weird. And I don't know, it seems to resonate with a lot of people. It's small town life, hockey players. I never got into that because I didn't really have a dad or a brother or whatever, but it's hockey players, skids. What I can't remember. I mean, in my day, it used to be the brains and the
stoners.
And the jocks. Yeah, and the stoners were sort of on the side. So now you've got, what's normal? And why are they all in love with the same girl? And is that what's normal? I mean, they're all, you know, they all kind of come together.
One of the things that I have always been proud of about Trailer Park Boys is that as a microcosm, these are people who don't have much. But try telling them they should feel sorry for themselves. It's never occurred to them. They're just trying to play the hand that they've dealt, and their goals are reasonable and manageable and generally attainable. Kind of the nice thing about that particular show, especially in the early going, is that no one calls bubbles words that society sometimes uses for people with learning challenges. No one judges Randy and Leahy's relationship. J-Rock thinks he's black. That's my character. He doesn't act that way. He thinks he is, and it's not questioned in the park. That's just J-Rock. And there's kind of a nice code among thieves on a show like that. I think Letterkenny is similar to a degree, and maybe best of all, anytime external forces threaten the group, they band together and stick together in the way that a family should. As Mike Clattenburg, who was the creator of Trailer Park, said, when you take away the guns and dope and swearing, it's a show about family and people who love each other very much. And that's kind of true. I think much has been written about Trailer Park Boys and why it resonated, which we never thought it would. It seemed very hyper-local. But I think it's because everyone knows those guys, and maybe watching it makes you feel a little better about your own lot in life.
People love J-Rock so much and love you as him, or loved you as him. And did you ever get any pushback? I mean, my millennial kids are, or I guess our kids are post-millennial, our 24-year-olds, are incredibly, like, if I even try to approach, if I say something with what I thought was a Southern accent, I'm accused of being insensitive to Black people. It's just... they are a different generation, and they are hyper aware, to put it kindly.
And I guess the way that we were probably a different generation too, I really have been challenging myself not to say kids these days, despite how different the parameters are now. I had a bit of an epiphany. We were watching an animated movie about fish, and when they go to the land, they grow legs and they walk on land. And I was like, hold the wedding. That doesn't make sense. And my kids were like, just go with it, man. And that is their entire approach to gender fluidity. And yeah, a classmate who might have been Kevin on Friday, who's Kendra on Monday, they don't overthink it. It just is. And that's kind of a beautiful approach. So I don't know that you could do a character like J-Rock now. At the time, people in the rap community were like, honestly, thanks for making fun of some of these guys. And people who were some of those guys were like, thanks for representing us, dog. One thing I didn't know until fairly recently is that there was a rapper in Halifax whose name was J-Rock. It was an acronym for Just Respect Our Culture.
Oh.
Honestly, didn't know that until the last couple of years when someone from the community here was like, man, did you steal the name from him? Of course not. Didn't know that. I felt a little sheepish about. But someone asked me around the fifth or sixth season if I felt sorry for J-Rock, and it had never occurred to me that you would. I don't think you can play characters like that while you're judging them at the same time. I think you have to try to inhabit them and be as plausible as possible.
It's fascinating because I think in Shoresy, which is the new spinoff of Letterkenny, you play Remy Nadeau. So I Googled Remy, and there is one.
Is a Remy Nadeau.
There is a Remy Nadeau. And you have, like, you've got his hair. We used to call it Levesque-ing his hair because I worked in Quebec City when he was premier. And he had two strands of hair that he greased across the top of his head. And you do that, and he's in the world. It's not just 1970s coats. It's like, it's really bad. So obviously you feel a certain freedom to love people and mock people all at once.
Yes. But you have to love them, I think, to mock them a little bit. It's like you can't play guitar badly in a comedy sketch unless you sort of know how to play guitar a little bit. So I was in French immersion. Half my teachers were from like the Maritimes, spoke Maritime French. Some of them were from France. Some of them were English teachers, like, oh, you teach biology? Can you learn French over the summer and then teach these French immersion kids biology and French? So the cocktail of influences in my French are very broad. And so I can manger an hamburger with the best of them, especially because we're close to Moncton, where Franglais is like the national language. So I felt like I could bluff my way through that a little bit. But Jared Kiso used to listen to our podcast, Taggart and Torrens, and we did a Quebec strip club DJ. And he would take Canadian names of famous Canadians and make them into their strip club versions. And something that struck me really funny was the idea that a performer in those small roadside Quebec venues would choose to use their own name. So one of my characters was Marie-Josée Bilodeau. And just the idea that Marie-José would be like, you can use my name, it's fine, just struck me really funny. So Rémi Nadeau was sort of born out of that same kind of guy who talk like this and talk like that. There's a lot of tongue talking in Franglais, I find.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you get to joke about it. And I'm also glad that on a number of shows that there's a recurring theme in fart jokes. And I love fart jokes.
Do you? You do.
Yes, he does. I don't, but you do.
I do. Yeah, well, we had to decide when we were getting our photos done for this podcast, how do we want to be? And I was like, I want to be goofy. And you were, Maureen, you were like, I want to be glamorous. So we were kind of like, you are kind of goofy, but you are, and I'm not at all glamorous.
The last thing I wanted was to, we have one shot on our website where we look like Cagney and Lacey, and I find that the goofiest thing. You know, we're both sort of like
there's
back
a cop
to back.
Show.
Yeah. We look like lady cops. And so, yeah, that blew up in our faces. But
you don't like fart jokes?
I don't like fart. I don't like bodily fluids at the best of times. Or jokes
about
them.
Well, you belong on the CBC then.
Yeah. Well, I have boys. I have grown sons and a husband, and I worked with men for years. I've lived them. You know, every day's a fart joke. And particularly at work, you know, what rock radio might have been like back in the day. And because I didn't like it, and here's the other thing, because I didn't like it, I was subjected to it all the time because I'm an easy target.
Of course.
Right?
So I found this really interesting, Jonathan, that you ask about me and Maureen. You're a podcaster or a journalist or whatever. Like most times when we interview people, it's all about them. And you're like, no, tell me about stuff.
I'm genuinely a fan and have questions that I've always wanted to ask. So this feels like the natural place to do it.
Yeah.
So have you got any more like jokes or?
No, Wendy wants to know what else you want to ask her.
Well, I guess it's in the same sort of category of questioning or same line of questioning. Now that you are not working there and working in an environment like this, which I have found when we started doing podcasts, I wanted to produce it. First segment is a top five list. Second segment's a guest. Third segment, some spontaneous fun. Fourth segment, a game. And it was only when the wheels came off the bus and we indulged these flights of fancy and showed kind of a warts and all environment that we really got great responses from our listeners. Wendy, how have you felt about being candid and trying to be comfortable just being your actual self in this context?
I've actually loved it, but there are dangers. Like I don't want to name them, but an old boss of mine got in touch after we did an interview with Ann Medina saying, no, that's not at all what happened. And are you not a journalist? You are a serious journalist. Do you not need to like check? And I'm like, no, I don't need to check everything. It is just about interviewing people that we find interesting and listening to their side of the story. And, you know, if they accuse somebody of murder, like, we're probably not going to put it on the air. Like there's been a couple of things that we won't tell you about that we've cut out, not swear words, but other things. But other than that, no, it's pretty freeing. It's the first time in my life that I haven't had what Maureen calls an overlord, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And when we were coming up, like a show like Street Sense, for example, because there were three channels, it had to appeal to everyone in the house gathered around that family hearth and had to kind of be broad enough that everyone could find some enjoyment in it. Now with podcasting, you can be so micro that the people who are interested in the particular thread you're pulling on will be rabid. And I've always said I'd rather be part of something that is everything to some than just like I'm vaguely aware of it, like something to everyone. And I think it used to be the medium is the message. Now it's like the message is the number of mediums there are. And I think that's why the networks in Canada haven't wrapped their heads around that yet.
I never could get, I mean, I have a master's degree in communications, and I still never understood what the medium is the message really meant. And I think that's misconstrued a lot. But what I do know about podcasting, just from having done it ourselves for the past year and listening to others, that we have a number of friends in broadcasting who've said, well, you know, do you pre-produce it or do you and they can't seem to get their heads around the fact that it's just a conversation, warts and all, and that's what's appealing about a podcast is that people might say anything and do say anything, and that it shouldn't be heavily edited because then it just turns into another boring set interview piece.
And in a hashtag LOL emoji universe, there are few forums for long form conversation. And I like that this is one.
So are you still doing a podcast?
Yeah. The former drummer of Our Lady Peace, Jeremy Taggart, and I started one, I guess, probably 6 or 7 years ago now.
And that's still going on.
Yes, not as frequently as it should, as I'm sure you know. If you can have regular drops on the same day at the same time, we enjoyed some great success early on. Got to do lots of things I never thought I'd be able to. We wrote a book for HarperCollins called Canadianity. We made an album. We toured, all things that I never imagined I would do. But as I sail into the twilight years of my so-called career, I'm looking to tick boxes that I haven't ticked. So that's been a really fun outlet. And also, you might do Shoresy in April, and it comes out on Canada Day the following year. So I like that we can do a podcast this afternoon. It's up tonight. We get emails right away. Like, the immediacy and feedback of love that sketch, do that again. Wasn't a fan of that. What did you mean by that? You can address it quickly. And I was missing that kind of way to scratch a creative itch.
Well, I think that's what's been so cool for us is trying something new, something completely different. We have no clue. We started out thinking we were going to do 6 to 8, and here we are. It's been a year, and we're now weekly, and it's fun, but it's a lot of work. But what I really want to know is, do you get to keep the clothes? Like, that jacket that you wear as Remy Nadeau, and I obviously you're not going to keep the hair, but the jacket and the pants, like all that stuff. It's so, we got to wrap up in a minute, but I got to know about the.
There was one thing I felt strongly about, and Letterkenny, I really wanted to have a beard so I could be virtually unrecognizable, and I'm not able to grow one. So I'm running out of ways to look different because I've played a lot of characters over the years. So with Remy Nadeau, the only thing I really cared about was Nick stains on my fingers and in my teeth. The general shellacking look, like the beauty department on that show is incredible. Ginger Martini is the real name of the real costume designer on Letterkenny and Shoresy. She is the architect of that look. So I can't take any credit for it, nor do I own any of the pieces. But as Jack Nicholson said, you let the costume do the acting.
It seems like everybody smokes on all the sitcoms everywhere these days. So you would know this. Are they like real cigarettes? Do you have to, like, what do reformed smokers
do? Are those clove cigarettes?
Yeah, it depends on the actor, I suppose. People ask that a lot, as you can imagine, about Trailer Park Boys. It's not real dope. Because imagine shooting for 14 hours. Well, with one exception, when Snoop Dogg was there, there might have been an exception made.
Maybe.
But it's not real dope. And same thing, Julian doesn't have a real rum and coke in his hand because he would be banged up from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day of shooting. It'd be too hard. So it's really up to the individual actor. If they're smokers, it's probably real smokes, but otherwise it would be clove cigarettes.
We could talk to you all day.
I know, it's so fun.
Yeah, it really is. You're a joy. You really are. I really enjoy talking to you. I'm sorry that I didn't realize you're still podcasting, but as you said, it's...
Yeah, he's a huge success.
Yeah, well, I knew he was. I just didn't know it was still going on. But, you know, other than that, congratulations on a fabulous career. And you're not in your twilight unless you want to be.
True story. But I actually do think about those things more than I ever did. Like, what would life look like after all the glamour of Canadian show business? And I think about the exact same as it does now, is the short story.
Yeah, it's pretty glamorous. Pretty glamorous. But as long as you get to keep that jacket with the fake fur collar, I'm good.
Okay, I'm going to put it in my contract.
Oh, I love seeing you again. It's so lovely to see you.
You too. Until soon. This is part one of four.
Okay.
We'll be calling next week. Three follow-up episodes. Yeah, perfect.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we're going to hold you to that.
Good deal.
Bye, Jonathan.
Bye, Jonathan. Bye.
Thank you.
Speaking of clothes and Halifax and being eccentric, I'm going to bring this all together. So occasionally I'm given to buying pieces of clothing, especially when I was younger, that are odd. A little bit of sort of theatricality, less so now, but I used to. And I have a pair of red pants, and they're like parachute pants, and they're made of red, the same color as the wall behind me. And I still wear them. And I was wearing them the other day. And John said, "You look like a fun person," which was not really what I was going for. But yeah. But I was in Halifax years ago with Aiden. We were looking at university, so we went to visit Dalhousie and King's College. So we were getting up to go to sharing hotel room. We're getting up to go look at these schools, and I put on these red pants. And he said, "Are you going to wear those?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I guess it's okay. I don't know anybody in this town."
So you're not supposed to wear red pants. Yeah, but mothers, you know, mothers are always embarrassing until they're not embarrassing. So
exactly.
Yeah, you got to get over that. I was a little bit starstruck, which is a little silly. I mean, I was kind of like nervous to talk to him.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't get that starstruck, but I was, and I'm just so happy. I wanted him to tell me that all the, like the buff dudes in the V-neck t-shirts and whatever, that they're all posers and that he's happy. And he does seem like he's happy. It's so great that he's like a great dad and he's also doing it, and he's doing it the way that he wants to do it, which is so great. So,
I think you're doing it the way you want to do it, too. I mean, not only did I enjoy Jonathan and enjoy this interview and this episode, but I really enjoyed you in this episode because, you know, it's been a year. And just listening to you.
Yeah.
Well, it flies even when you're not having fun. But just listening to you talk about how far you've come from where you were and how much you're enjoying it. And I mean, I am, too. But I'm glad that you are. Is that weird?
Yeah.
Am I weird for thinking that's weird?
No, I'm trying to be deviant, but I'm really just a normie. So we'll get there.
You'll be Canada's sweetheart, and that's good. What we're going to put on your tombstone.
Going to destroy that. Talk soon, I guess.
Talk soon.
Yeah.
See you later.
Women of Ill Repute was written and produced by Maureen Holloway and Wendy Mesley, with the help from the team at the Sound Off Media Company and producer Yet Belgraver.
Hey listeners, I'm Christy.
And I'm Melissa, and this is Buried Motives, where we dig deep into the details of some of the most gruesome
dirtbag murderers. She said she enjoyed hurting things that can't fight back.
And that is a disturbing view into the mind of a murderer. And such a dirtbag.
Yeah, that's not even strong enough words. This is totally a recipe for disaster. And not to justify whatever is going to happen, but you can totally understand and see how this would be in the works.
If you were only to look at what she did later on and not know any of that history, she would appear like off the wall crazy.
Oh, 100%. Because we're not even close to getting to the end yet. But you can just see this pattern and all this kind of stuff developing in her, which is what we're here for. We're digging deep.
Join us each Thursday as we unearth the dirt bags that live among us
and the motives buried there. Hope you join us as we exhume the truth.